You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hi, everyone.
It's Kara.
And Jess. We've come to the end of our second season. Wow, y'all, I almost can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah, it's wild. And one that was fully remote and in two time zones for 90% of it.
Yeah. Oh my God. We really stuck it out. But it's crazy to think how the episodes from these COVID days are sort of like a time capsule, right? Like chronicling this surreal moment in our world with so much changing along the way. We thank you for listening and love to hear how these conversations helped you not feel so alone during this time. You helped us as well.
Truly. Our worlds were upended and this has gone on so long. Knowing that you, our listeners, were feeling seen, heard, comforted, and inspired meant everything to Jess and I personally. I mean, we needed that connection too.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you. We are so appreciative of all the support you've given us, the downloads, messages, and shares on social media. Thank you.
As you all know, the theater industry is on the verge of coming back.
Holla!
And we can't wait to shift back to our old lives. However, we also have some awesome new plans for the future, but we can't make it happen without you. If you like what you're hearing, tell a friend, give us a shout out, connect with us on Instagram, and most importantly, make sure you follow, rate, and review us wherever you get your podcasts. That is truly how we spread the word and find others who are in need of connection too.
Yeah, the motherhood journey is one that no one should ever embark on alone. And we want to continue to provide thought-provoking, inspirational, comforting, and entertaining stories for you and your village. Thank you so much. Stay safe.
Stay sane.
And we'll see you soon.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to the season finale of Mama's Talkin' Loud. I'm Kara Cooper.
And I'm Jessica Rush. Broadway dancer turned fitness guru, today's guest has endured unspeakable loss on a very public stage. Her husband's battle and eventual passing due to COVID-19 became a national tragedy through which people rallied and mourned the immense loss our world has faced through this pandemic.
In addition to running a fitness empire, co-hosting the talk, and raising her adorable two-year-old as a single mom, she just released a memoir titled Live Your Life, her husband's original song that she made popular when people all over the world came together daily to sing it. It has since become an anthem of sorts, not only in how you face loss, but how we make the most of every moment we have. Here is our conversation with Amanda Klutz. Welcome, Amanda.
You guys, it's so nice to talk to you and see your faces again. It's been too long.
It's really wild. I mean, I was telling Jess, like 2002 is when we met, I think.
Oh my God. Yes, it was.
Past, like a lifetime, a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that we start our podcast is by asking our guests about their kids. So, I mean, we know a lot about Elvis from Instagram, but we...
I don't share anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
Tell us a little bit about him and, you know, his personality, whatever you want to say. We just want to get to know him.
Do you know what's so funny, you guys? I remember when I was pregnant and Nick, you know, never too much of a fan of how much I spent on time on Instagram. And he was like, so, you know, when Elvis is born, like, we're not gonna put him on Instagram a lot, right? And I was like, no, we're not. I was like, I know. I was like, I'm gonna be really good about that. Like, I try to just really like share fitness stuff now anyways. And like, yeah, no, I totally agree. I don't want to be that person. Cut to, cut to, I'm like, good morning, musical mornings, he's eating breakfast. He's looking, he's playing on a bike.
But the musical mornings are like the sweetest thing. I mean, that's you've been doing them for so long that it's,
since the hospital, you guys, I realized that last year on his first birthday, when I looked back, I was like, oh my gosh, I started this in the hospital. He's great though. He just turned 2. And as you both know, I mean, I'm sure you're both going to tell me just wait, it gets better. But I seriously feel like this, like 18 months to this time has been my favorite time with him. I'm obsessed because he's still this baby who cuddles with me, but he also is his own little person and is starting to copy things I'm saying and repeat and talk to me. And I'm just like, what is happening? And he's now looking at me like, mom, I got it. And I'm like, no, you don't. You're 2. Like, you don't get it. But God, I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with my son, if you can't tell.
Well, we were just talking about like their little voice at this age, yes. The little voice that comes. It's the most precious thing. And you're just going to love having all those videos to look back on. Oh. And that's the thing about Instagram too. It's like, they are our pride and joy. Like, there is nothing I am more proud of than my kids. There's just nothing. Yeah. So it's so hard not to want to share that with the world, right? Right.
And the minute they come out of you, however they come out of you, you're like, oh, nothing else in the world matters. Like, all of, it's like that split second of like, I don't care about anything else. Like, nothing else. My whole life has changed. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, it's the most wild thing. I have to say, Kara just said yesterday that that age was her favorite. We literally were just talking about this. And my favorite is about 3, is right around. I like that sweet spot, but oh, it's so good. And then it just becomes even more crazy, like as you see them develop into their own people. And oh my God, Amanda, just wait. It's like, it's mind blowing. I'm looking at Elliot, like, you came out of my body. Sometimes Eric will say that, you know, Eric will be like, you grew her. You remember that? That like tweenager was in your body.
Oh my God.
It's totally wild. Yeah. I was babysitting a newborn like month and a half old today. And I was holding her and I was like, I can't believe that this is what my babies were. You know, it's just, it's wild. Yeah. We're gonna jump right in. And if it's too soon, you tell us, but we both have read the book. I am almost finished, just finished.
About an hour ago.
Yeah. She texted me. She's like, I finished. But
it was so beautiful, Amanda. So I just want to say that.
Thank you.
So I think we just want to talk about the thing that struck me from the get-go is that, you know, we live in this Instagram perfect world, right? And you were so beautifully honest and open about how everything wasn't perfect. Do you know what I mean? Like every relationship has its ups and its downs. It doesn't mean that we love the person any less. It doesn't mean that the marriage has any less meaning. And I think that that was just so powerful for anybody who has followed your journey. Because, you know, chances are they joined you when you were already in this really kind of painful, traumatic part of your life, you know, but I've been following you on Instagram for years, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so it was really eye-opening for me too, as like a entrepreneur and a business person, to see how hard things were, you know, how hard you worked to get to where you needed to go. And so just kind of rounding out the picture of who you were, what your relationship was, all the steps that got you to where you became. I mean, you are a famous person now. You are a person who's in the, I mean, you are, there's no denying it, right? You are a celebrity.
Yeah.
You are.
I love how you said it. You are a famous person.
I know.
You know, it's so weird, you guys. And I realized this when I wrote the book, I think I realized with it, when I wrote this book, you're right. Like when Nick got sick, I had 50,000 Instagram followers, which to me was a lot of followers. You know, I mean, I felt very proud of that following, and it was mostly due to the fitness company that I had created, but all of it to the fitness company I created. So yeah, I gained like 500,000 Instagram followers in that time. So you're right. They only know me as that person. Unless you did a deep dive on my life, you didn't necessarily know that I was, you know, a struggling actor, dancer, you know, living in New York City, what my life was, which is totally fine. I didn't expect anyone to like, you know, deep dive into who I was. But this book was a chance to tell our story, to tell who I was, to tell who Nick was, because I realized in going back in my Instagram archives and writing this story, you know, you have all these people praying for you, supporting you, cheering you on, singing with you at 3 p.m., invested in your story, invested in Nick and Amanda. And it was like, do you know who Nick and Amanda are? Do you want to know our story? And so Anna and I had this chance to kind of weave in who we are, how we met, you know, who we were individually, who we were as a couple. And yeah, like we aren't perfect. Nobody is. I am not a perfect person. Nick was not a perfect person. Our marriage was not perfect, but that's what makes you strong, you know?
Of course. I think I was so, I had no idea, because I feel like when you started AK Fitness, when you started the jump roping workouts, it felt like it took off right away. Do you know what I mean? Like when I think back on that time, I just remember being like, oh my God, I remember Eric saying, he's like, well, Amanda's starting this like jump rope thing. Nick said she's like doing this fitness and, you know, and then on your Instagram, I was following you and it looked like it was fabulous and going great, you know? And you say in the book, like it was not. Sometimes I had like one person there. I made it look like it was great. And so I think to just hear that side is so important, no matter what our journeys are, to hear from people who are successful. And that's something that, you know, aside from Nick and the journey of the pandemic, you as a woman and as a mother, you have created something. I mean, before you became a mom, but you have built this community, not just the COVID wake up Nick community, but the community of people who are looking to you to stay in shape and who follow you as inspiration and who look forward to seeing your smiling face on the workouts every week, you know? And that is something that is to be applauded. To build anything from the ground up is hard. It's really hard.
It's really hard. It is. Really no, hard. Thank you.
And so yeah. I just, hats off to you, girl, because I remember in the beginning, although I thought it came a lot easier. So it was one of those moments where I was like, oh, okay. Like you said, fake it till you make it. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, you gotta, you do. And it's so funny because I think that's a great example of how Instagram can make things look like it's perfect. And wow, everything just came so easy for that person. And she has the perfect life. And yeah, you don't know that they're waking up at 6 a.m., traveling all over the city all day, doing 12 workouts. And then in a day, you can't move your body at night. You can barely walk the next morning, but you do it again because you're building your business. And if you're not doing it, nobody else is, you know? Yeah. But you know, we know that story. I mean, it looks like, you know, if you work on Broadway long enough, it's like, oh, they're always working. And it's like, no, actually, I haven't been in a Broadway show in 2 years, but wow, I'm glad that you think that I have. That's good. You know what I mean? Like, it just, I don't know. It's funny what I guess social media persona can put on and then what is actually happening, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think that's what the pandemic did though, in a way. Like the pandemic got rid of perfection. Like nobody wanted to see that anymore. You know what I mean? It was like, put away your fancy clothes and jewels and like, no one's trying to act like, you know, it was almost embarrassing if you posted anything that looked extravagant during that time. Nobody was in for that boat. Like everybody's like, bye, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's about honesty.
Exactly. Yeah. It was about honesty. And I think even when you had good honesty, people were like hesitant to show it. And then it became a place where you were like, we have to hold space for both, right? The good and the bad.
Correct.
And you talk about that a lot, like in your book with Elvis, you know, and that's something, you know, Kara and I specifically wanted to talk to you about being a mom and your journey. And you say in the book, you know, and we all know how this is when you're a mom, you just have to like put on your face and keep going. And you try to protect your kids. And that's something we all were doing this year, just in general, you know, is help them not get mired down in what was happening and know the gravity of it all, particularly when they're small. But I know how you did it because of the book, but Elvis, he's been thriving, it seems like. You know, like I was so touched by what you wrote about Anna and Biggie being there. I feel like
everybody
we all just know.
Biggie now. He's so funny. He's in LA and he's like, people are calling me Biggie. He's like, it's so weird to be called Biggie by other people that aren't you guys. And we're like, really, Biggs? And he's like, yeah, it's like, everyone's calling me Biggie now.
I love that.
It's true. But to have them and know, you know, that it was, you know, to know that you could leave Elvis with them and that he was loved and taken care of as closely as if it were you or Nick. Like there was no one takes care of your child better than you do, except for maybe their grandparents or their aunts, you know, the ones who love them dearly. And to have had the family there and see how they were able to just keep him. I love the moment in the book when all of a sudden Anna has won him over. And he,
Sweet. It was so cute. And then they were like bosom buddies. I mean, she literally became his second mother and she was just the greatest. Yeah. I don't know what I would have done without the two of them, not only for just keeping my spirits up, but for really stepping in and becoming second mom and dad, you know, because just to have that male role model too, for male energy for Elvis at that time, you know, looking back was so important for that little guy. But you know, you guys listen, I mean, you know this too, even if you're having just like the worst day ever, and then that little person comes up to you and is like, mama, trash trucks. And you're like, that's right. That's right. Trash trucks. Here we go. And then they're watching trash trucks and their face lights up and you look down and you're like, like, you know what I mean? Like you can't help but not smile. I mean, it's written in the book, but Leslie Nick's mom, she said, don't worry, he'll make you smile every day. He'll make you get up out of bed. You'll have to. And thank God for him, because he'll make you keep walking forward. And she was right. There was no option.
Yeah. There was no, the immense pain that you were feeling, you couldn't just stay and wallow in bed. Like there was no option to do that. Zero.
No,
they make you put one foot in front of the other, no matter what. And so now things have like shifted a little bit. Obviously you have this job on the talk, you wrote a book, you're doing a book tour, you're incredibly busy. And you talked about this a little bit on the talk, but you talked about how hard it is to be a single mom, a working mom, a mother who's still grieving, a mother who has to get help from other places and has immense guilt not being with their child. And that's something that we talk about a lot, this like push and pull of being a mom, but also being a professional. And, you know, you are in an even more intense version of that. But can you talk a little bit about how that goes for you? You talked a little bit about the struggle, but that's something that we're here for. That's what we talk about all the time.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard too when you have led a career for so long where it is like all about, you know, yourself in a way. I don't mean in a bad way, but like, you know, being, you know, a performer on Broadway, like it is very much like you do the work and you get the job and it's very self-rewarding. And we love that, right? Like I love working. I really enjoy working hard and creating things and achieving goals and all of those things. But then I also really love being a mom. And of course, spending that time with Elvis and being there with Elvis. But then you have the extra hard level of being a single parent and knowing that, you know, all the financial responsibilities and everything that you want him to have in life, that you want to have with your child in life, is on you. And that adds obviously that extra pressure of wanting to work harder and achieve, but then that cancels out time with him. And so it's a tough balance. And one of my single mom's new friends that I met here, just over Instagram. Actually, we've actually never met, but we're really good friends on Instagram. We were commiserating over being single parents. And she was saying how hard it is because nobody sees, and this is, I said this at the talk, but it's so hard. It's like, nobody sees the times where you're just like carrying five things of groceries and you have your kid on your hand and you're singing Wheels on the Bus and you haven't eaten all day. You've barely, you know, you've barely gotten anything done, but you're like, so you want to scream and but you're still making everything happen. And you just wish you had your person there just to, you know, lighten the load or pat yourself on the back or give you a hug and be like, honey, you're killing it. You know, no one tells you that. And it's okay. You know, you get to a point where you're like, it's okay. I don't need to be told I'm killing it. But, you know, you miss having that person that is there too, witnessing it saying, damn, you're doing a good job, you know? But it's, you know, it's tough, guys. I'm not going to lie. It's tough.
Yeah. I mean, it's just purely too, from just a logistical standpoint, like managing waking up and getting, you know, shooting the talk, you know, you have to get to work, you have to do that. I mean, like we know, you know, making this happen right now, you were like from 3 to whatever, and then I have to go home to Elvis. Do you know what I mean? It's true though. It's like, that is, yeah. And it was so lovely and we appreciated that. And we're like, yes, of course she has to go home to Elvis. Like you clearly prioritize your boy, you know, and you should, and that's the way. And it sounds like you're really, I think you're nailing it, mama. Like you're having a healthy balance of working and fulfilling yourself and also just, you know, making money and things like that, because that's important. But also you get, you know, you're making sure that you go home and your mama, and that's,
I think it's also probably, as you were talking about, like having that person to say, you're doing, you're killing it. I think it probably is also hard not have the person to say, like, today was really hard. It was hard to be a parent today. You know, like sometimes I need validation from my husband to be like, you know, today was hard, but we got through it, you know? And sometimes it's just so good to be able to articulate that and not have the guilt attached to it, you know, to be like, oh, this is hard. I shouldn't be saying it's hard. It's all I ever wanted, but this is hard, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. Actually, I never thought of that moment, but you're right. Like that moment where you put the kid to bed and then you get a glass of wine and you sit down and you're like, woo!
Exactly.
Yeah. And your person's like, how good does this wine taste? And you're just like, good.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Continue to marvel at you. I always have. It's funny. I remember someone asking me about you. I can't remember who it was, but they're like, is she really just happy? Like, is that just, no, but they were saying that can't be real. And I was like, no, that really is who she is. She is an incredibly positive, optimistic person. It's totally genuine. That is who you are. Which I think also it was so made it even harder to see everything that you've gone through, but the way that you have faced with grace, what you have, the cards you've been dealt, what has happened to you over the past year is truly astonishing. And the thing that I keep going back to is this path that you're on, the book, all of it is so deeply rooted to the tragedy that you have endured. How do you
how do I articulate this? I mean, how do you have, I mean, you just did all these book interviews and here you are talking about it again, but like, how do you continue to talk about the thing over and over again, to write the book, to deal with your grief so head on, record it and be in such a public space? Like how do you do it? I know you're incredible. I know you, I know who you are, and you are an incredible human and your optimism and light and positivity, but that doesn't take away from the incredible things that have happened to you this year. So how are you?
You know, I'll just start with like writing the book. Writing the book was never something I thought, you know, what I would do. You know, while the story was happening, or while everything was happening with Nick, you guys, like there were so many, oh my God, people that reached out. Can we follow you around? Can we do a documentary? Can we make this a film? Can we do the, like in the midst of it? Like, I was like, what? No. Yeah. Like, I mean, first of all, it was hard enough for me to get in the hospital. You think a whole film crew is going to be allowed? And then like, you really think I'm going to allow a camera to be on my husband right now without his consent and the way like he looks right now in the hospital? I mean, nobody looks good in the hospital, even if you're going in just to get blood work, yet nobody looks good. So when I got the offer to do the book, and then I got Anna on board, the book was just therapeutic, to be honest, to write it down. I knew I needed to write things down for Elvis, first of all, so that I could remember things, how they were, the dates they were, because I can imagine him coming to me one day being like, wanting to know the story. If I didn't write it down, even if this book offer didn't come through, I would have, I mean, I was writing him letters throughout the whole thing. I was trying to keep, you know, track of everything that happened, because I wanted to document it for him. So this book was in a way, a beautiful way to just do that in a great storytelling way. But it was extremely therapeutic, really cathartic to just kind of get it out. So hard. Doing the audiobook was harder, because when you're writing, you're not saying it, right? You're just writing it. And I was writing through tears every night, but then having to vocalize it. And, you know, we're performers. So I was not performing it, but also not performing it. You know what I mean? It's hard not to put on your actor-ness behind you when you're reading this story. So that was, yes, very, very tough. But it's funny, Kara, because when you were asking me this question, I thought for the first time, maybe it's because of what we do, of that, like, we get up every night and we do a show. And sometimes that show is 42nd Street. And sometimes that show is, something.
Les Mis.
Les Mis. I mean, I would never be cast in Les Mis, but I would love to be cast in Les Mis. But yeah, sometimes it's Les Mis, and sometimes it's really tough, you know, or it's Follies, you know, I did Follies. That's a drastic turn from 42nd Street. And we do it every night, twice a week, you know, sometimes twice in a day, you know what I mean? So maybe it's like, it just ingrained in myself to like, be able to just do it. I don't know. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like maybe sometimes compartmentalize it a little bit. Like, it's, yeah, you've done it, sure, and you emote it and you got it. You released all the emotion while you were writing it. And now you've sort of compartmentalized it to a new space. You know,
yeah, yes. And it goes in and out of that compartmentalizing. And I'm very good at compartmentalizing my life. You know, like I do my stuff with Elvis in the morning, slide it to the left. I come to the talk, that's finished, slide to the left. I go home, I film a fitness video, done. Then I have Elvis dinner. You know what I mean? Like that's how I do my days. And that's always how I've done my days. So, I don't know, in a way it's like nothing new. Obviously, this material is harder. And yes, some days after interviews from these book tours, I'm just completely drained and I really can't even talk anymore. And then sometimes I'm okay. But I think a beautiful thing about this book, and another reason why I'm so glad I did it, is because, you know, people will keep talking about Nick Cordero, and that's how you keep somebody alive. You keep his memory alive by by doing something like this that continues to reach people and continue to, who's Nick? Well, I'll listen to his music. And then that keeps his music alive. And so I love that idea of it. It keeps him alive.
I love that too. It's so interesting. When I was reading it, I was struck by, we've all just endured a historic event, right? It's like when you read someone's story about 9/11 or World War II or World War I, like people are going to refer to this book to understand what the experience of COVID-19 was. And they're going to understand what it was through Nick's story, which is, you know, incredibly powerful that you've left that for him. I was thinking about it like with my kids. They're going to remember wearing a mask, whatever, maybe to school, maybe, who knows, right? They're going to remember that we were in our house, but they're not going to understand. And 20 years from now, I'm going to be like, read this book. This is what was going on when you had to wear a mask to school. This was that when you were talking about the fear and how no one left their house and things like that. You know, those personal stories of global and historical events live on forever and forever. I think Nick will be a real benchmark of this time, you know?
Well, thank you. I mean, yeah, isn't it crazy how even just we forget even like how different our world was a year ago? Like, you know what I mean? Just even a year ago, we were still really not going anywhere. Things really weren't opening. Everybody was still very scared. And maybe we just started cleaning our groceries because we learned that that's safe. We don't, our groceries, you know what I mean? Like what we do, we forget it very quickly. And I think even, you know, maybe back in the day, like World War II era, Depression era, we would forget as easy as we do now, but our lives go back so quickly, you know, and we forget how scared we were and how for the first time in modern history, everything stopped and we were all on the same page. And I don't know, it still boggles my mind to think about that, how fast we've moved forward.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's wild. And if you were in New York City, I'm sure LA might be this way too, but it's like coming back to New York from being in California was like, oh, did that happen? Like, it almost feels like a dream. It's like, did I really live in La Jolla for a year? Because here in New York, it's like, people are out, they're eating, no masks. They're just like living their lives. And it's crazy how quickly we stepped right back into it. And it's almost like it was a dream or like a glitch in the matrix, you know?
No, guys, sometimes like I still can't believe that what happened to me happened. I say it all the time, actually. And there's a lot of times where I still feel just like that Nick is going to walk through the door because he's been gone doing a show. And it's been, you know, like 6 weeks in La Jolla, you know what I mean? And because I feel like Elvis and I talk about Nick all the time and I talk about Dada and, you know, we kiss him a good night every night. And like, I feel like even if he walked in the door, Elvis would just run up to him and be like, Dada, that's how, like, it just doesn't feel real. Like it doesn't, nothing feels real about the whole thing. And I lived through it. I know it's real, but it doesn't feel real.
Yeah. Well, I think probably, you know, there was just so much, it was so, all of it was abnormal, right?
Yeah.
Nick getting sick, Nick alone getting sick, regardless of what it was, and going and being in the hospital in the ICU, and then combine that with the lockdown. And it was the beginning and no one knew what was going on. I mean, it's just, I remember, I don't think you're aware, or maybe Quinn told you, but Quinn was giving us updates from Preston so that Eric and I knew, and like, throughout the time, and singing at 3 o'clock, live your life. You know, I mean, there are things you talk about in the book, how your dad said, there is a miracle every day, Amanda, like every day that Nick is here past April 1st or April 10th or whenever that was, like, that is a miracle. And at the end you say, you know, your friend says, maybe people wouldn't have known if the story had ended that day. They wouldn't know live your life. They wouldn't know who Nick Cordero was to the degree that they do. It would be a completely different place that you were in and Elvis. And you know, I know you are a believer and you are a Christian and your faith is so important to you. And I wonder, it was tested. I mean, I can imagine that it's been tested greatly for you. And how have you been able to work through it? I mean, I was raised in a Southern Baptist household, which is like a whole nother thing, but, but for sure, like I pray and I talk to God and and these moments, this is one of those moments where you ask why, you know, and I am so in awe of the faith you have and the way you've persevered through this. I mean, I like you said, there's Elvis, but, How have you wrapped your brain around that or worked your way through it? Or maybe you still are.
Well, you know, I look back at like the ups and downs of my life, even just from like being, you know, like a young girl. And for some reason I can like literally say that whenever anything gets like really, really bad, going through my divorce, even just like, guys, if you open up my Bible, there's this verse that I say, and I have every audition that I've ever gone to next to this verse, because before I would leave the house, I would say this verse so that I wouldn't like be scared. And I would go into the audition feeling like strong and like, God's got me, like it's there. So like, I do feel like when like going gets tough, that's like when I really buckle down in my faith. Yes, it was tested. Oh my God. There were days where I would like, you know, not scream to my mom and dad, but in a way scream to my mom and dad being like, okay, God's always like, bring people together. And the more people that pray, the more I'll hear you. I have literally the whole world praying. No one's hearing me. Like he just keeps getting worse. And like, I'm not happy about it. I'm really mad. And, you know, and of course I would say all of those things, you know, but I will say what's crazy, you guys, and, you know, I don't know, but, you know, Nick was not a believer. I talk about this in the book. We had very different beliefs in religion and I don't know if I was ever certain on what Nick believed. I don't even know if he was certain on what he believed, but, you know, when everything got really bad, when he died and then there were a couple other times where the doctors were like, there's nothing else we can do. And I would sit and I would pray by him and I would play Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace. Cause that 10 minute Amazing Grace is literally like, you've just taken yourself to church. Yeah, listen to it. It's amazing. Like you really feel like all the angels and saints are with you. You're like, okay. but I felt like he was having like an internal battle conversation. There was like, I don't know. All I can explain it is that there was a very crazy, weird bond I felt between like Nick and God and me and, figuring it out, the three of us. And I think Nick, you know, Nick loved to learn. He loved to have conversations. He loved to listen. And I was dying for him to wake up and be able to talk because I just felt like sitting by him in the hospital every day, I felt like he was talking to God and he was having some really good chats. And I just wanted him to wake up so I could be like, what have you learned? Tell me everything. Cause he like technically died like four times. And you know, I was like deep diving into people that have died and come back and, you know, all these stories and talking to people and hearing their stories from being in a coma. What did you experience? What did you hear? Were you hearing voices? Did you see the light? So I had all these different sidebar conversations with people as he was in this coma. And so I was just like, I couldn't wait for him to wake up and talk. And, I never got that, but I felt it. I felt it. It was very crazy. So long story short, I don't know how to explain it, but I actually got stronger and felt stronger in my faith, even though I was mad at times and felt like, how can this be happening? And this isn't fair. I did get, it was stronger.
Well, I think, you know, it's incredible seeing you go through this. And I know, you know, you didn't start out sharing thinking it was going to end the way it did. And I think for so many, and you say this in the book, so many of us felt like, well, he didn't come this far to have it be, you know what I mean? That was the thing that was just like, well, wait, yeah. You know, we didn't come this far. And, to have that happen. And I say, I mean, he wasn't ours, you know, but he was ours, like the Broadway community, you know, it's everyone loved Nick Cordero. Like that's the thing you know, he was light also, just as you are positivity and light, Nick was such an incredible presence and person. And a story that I always share, and I'd like to share with you because I don't think I have, is Please. That when I did the, we didn't do the reading of bullets together, did we? I don't think so. I did the first one, first two.
I did the second one. So then we did the second one together?
We might have. It was when Nick was in it. Yeah.
Yes. And then I was there.
You were there.
Hilarious. Right.
That's fun. There's just so many things, right? You like see people passing and then you do these readings for a week or whatever. Anyway, so, but I will
slightly remember this now. I feel like I remember this now, but go ahead.
No. So yeah, me and Jimmy Moy sat behind Betsy and Zach because we did that first scene with them. That was what I did. So
yes.
Yeah.
So I do remember now.
So Nick, what was interesting to me, and I've shared this with people, he was the only principal that talked to me all week long. All week long. Like it was the most odd thing. Like Zach and Betsy were doing their thing and it was Zach's first time doing it. Like everybody was, you know, it's all crazy in that time anyway, but I just noticed that he was the only person who was doing a role who like came to the other side. Do you know what I mean? Who came over to the ensemble and would check in, how you doing? And he had just gone on in Rock of Ages or just taken over or something. Like he was, so he was sort of like flying high, but I just remember that. That was before I actually knew him, but he was so kind in that way, you know? And so,
yeah,
I think with the Broadway community, you know, it was word spreads fast, no matter what, right? In all the ways. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we hope, and I, you know, I know you say it in the book, but you know, we were all so there with you guys. I mean, I know we can't ever have gone through it and know what it was, but there was so much love coming your way. And I think that I know, as people have said, like he was, I don't want to say an example, but you know, it's like he was, everyone was looking to him and to you guys, you know? And, because everyone feels like they know each other.
Yeah.
I know so-and-so. And you're like, you don't actually know that person.
Totally.
You know what I mean? But the Broadway community just meant it was anything we could do. And I say this, I know that Eric would want me to say this, but like Waitress being able to record the song and working on We Need a Miracle, like that meant so much to them. And just, no, and I know you never probably felt like you were truly alone. You talked about that, but like there was so much love coming your way. And
oh my God, I felt it, you guys. No, seriously, especially after leaving New York. I don't know why, you know, sometimes there's such a separation between New York and LA. It's like, once you leave New York, you're like, oh, you're in LA now. Like you don't care about New York anymore. And which was not the case, of course, but like you sort of feel so far away from New York. And no, it was like, wow. I mean, I was blown away every day by the Broadway community, the people that were just reaching out and just, cast singing his songs and the cast of Jersey Boys singing Elvis, You're Just Too Good to Be True. And like, I mean, just like in my first Broadway show, Good Vibrations, like recreating a song and changing the lyrics. Like it was so awesome though, because it's, like, that's what's so special about Broadway people though. Like you can't get us down. Like, you know what I mean? Like we will, like, you can't tell us to sit at home and do nothing. We're like, oh yeah, well, we're still going to record a song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we can't not help and create and support each other. And I forget who I was talking to, but he's more film and TV. And he said something like, yeah, there's a reason why you don't call it the film and TV community, because it's not a community. Like the Broadway community is always the Broadway community because it is such a community. And oh my God, I felt it. And I know Nick felt it too. I know he did. I mean, I would play him everything and show him everything in the hospital room. And there were days that he was more alert than others. And you could just tell when he, and you know, that kind of stuff meant the world to Nick. You know, Nick was such a friend person, such a community guy, such a collaborator. When I was showing him like what the Broadway community was like doing for him, stepping up and like comforting us, like I knew it was keeping him going. Like it, you could just tell, I'm telling you, you know your person well enough. And you guys know this from, you know, being married and having that relationship, you know, it's like, they don't have to be talking. They don't have to necessarily be even awake. You know, when it's like, getting to them.
Yeah.
I love that. You're right. You can't keep the, the Broadway community is like, there's no Broadway. That's okay. We're going to create anyway. Here we go. Let's put every video out there.
It's so true. You can't keep them down. Like there's a week where we're like, oh, we're not doing a show. Okay. We're sad. We're binging a Netflix show. And then it's like, all right,
time to get to work. Yeah.
But I feel Broadway. Like that like sums you up, Amanda. You can't keep you down. You are just like this indomitable spirit. I really don't have the words for it because I feel like I would have shut myself in a hole and not come out. Having gone through what you've gone through, everybody deals with grief differently, and the way that you've forged through it with such grace and there has been joy, you know, the juxtaposition of joy in your life with your son and the people that have rallied around you and grief. And I think that that's so powerful for people to see, right? To know that like, even though you are walking with this pain and I know it doesn't ever go away, I know it's there. There are these moments of brightness and light that you can have. And so we try to like ask our guests an engagement question that might enlighten them as well. But what would be your advice to someone dealing with intense grief? And I know that you are still very much in the midst of that. It's not, you know, and it never ends. I'm not saying that it does.
Yeah.
But what would be one little nugget from you to say like, this is how you get through the day with some lightness and positivity?
Yeah. You know, it's so hard. And I feel like there's no, it's hard to even give advice because everybody goes through their walk of grief differently. And, you know, I'm so type A that when Nick passed, I immediately Googled grief and the stages of grief came up and I printed it out and I put it in my room so that I knew like, okay, week 1 through 3, I'm going to be feeling this. And week 4 through 6, seriously, I'm not kidding you. That's what I did. And then I realized like that wasn't how I was feeling. What I started to do and what I continued to do every day is just find, this was very helpful in the beginning. 2 weeks after he passed, we went to Ohio and I made it my challenge while I was in Ohio to do one thing a day that made me happy, just one. And maybe there were 5 that day, or maybe it was just that one, but I did one thing a day that would make me happy, whether it was watching a dumb show or cooking baking a cake or going for a walk in my old neighborhood and just, you know, looking at the old houses. It was whatever made me happy that day is what I did. And then ironically read a quote like later, because, you know, I'm a big quote girl, this one quote about, if you find one flower a day at the end of the week, you have a beautiful bouquet. And it's so true. And it's just literally about finding those things you can be grateful for. And I know it might sound, you know, like, I don't know that, you know, not dumb. That's not the word I'm looking for, but it's not, you know what I mean? That, 'cause that one thing can then lead to another thing, or maybe it's just that one thing, but at least it's one thing that you did, you know? And then the other thing I will say is what keeps me going, even in like those literally hardest of days is, and I think this is actually good advice to tell a grieving person, because it's just so awful how loss can be so unexplainable, is I think about Nick and I think about what would he want me to be doing? Would he want me to be happy? Yes. Would he want me to keep working? Yes. Would he want me to be strong for Elvis? Yes. Would he want me to find love again? Yes. Would he want me to thrive and be successful? Yes. Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of how I get myself out of a hole. And, you know, whether you've lost a parent or, God forbid, a child, if you think about that, what would that person want for me? It helps you through those times where you're literally just wanting to do nothing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think regardless of grief, you're viewpoint of life is just so powerful. And the message of live your life, move your body, because you can. I'm a personal trainer and I tell my clients that all the time. I'm like, you can move your body today, move it. And also you move your body so you can keep moving your body every day that you're alive, you know? And I just think that what you put out into the world is so tangible, Amanda. It's this thing that people can hang their hats on and say like, did I get my good thing for today? Did I do my good thing for myself? What's my positive outlook for the day? Did I move my body because I can move my body? Like, there are things that people can do for themselves that have such a positive impact. And no matter the journey that has gotten you here, I mean, this is just who you are. It's who you are. I've known you for so long, but I feel like to have endured what you have endured and to have maintained that part of yourself and even made it grow is just so incredible. So I'm saying thank you. I watch your stories every day and I gain such not only perspective on where I am in my moments of my life, but joy and positivity and inspiration. And it's just incredible. And you're having Nick's memory live on forever. And I just think you're amazing, Amanda.
Oh, thank you.
And
thank you.
You guys are amazing. Well, thanks. I watch your stories every day and I also feel all those things, but then I also think, damn, how is she doing all of this?
For sure.
I just want to say you're killing it, Mama.
It's like you have 48 hours in the day as opposed to everybody else's 24. That's what it feels like.
I just am very good at multitasking, guys. Like, you know, I don't know. Like right now, throughout this whole Zoom, I'm also filming a workout video. Like, that's how I look. I'm teasing. I'm not. But you
it's
know,
just
like,
with your ankles. It's just your ankles.
Yeah, it's just an ankle foot, you know, strengthen your ankle workout. It's already done. In the bank, on the app.
Yes. P.S. I was doing the AK arms the other day and Elliot came over. Yeah. Because girl, Mama has to take care of this quarantine 15. But I was doing my AK arms and Elliot came over and started doing it with me. And after like, you know, 20 seconds, she's like, Mom, this is hard. I was like, well, girl, just keep going. I said, it's just your arms. You're not even like using any weights or anything. And we lost her before the 4 minutes were out. But, you know. But then we were walking down the street yesterday and all of a sudden she was like, Mom, look, I'm doing those arm workouts.
Oh my God. I used to copy my mom's workouts all the time. She Me would be too. In the living room doing weird leg things.
Jane that Fonda.
Now I teach. Yeah. That is literally what my workout is. And I used to love like watching my mom work out. And even Elvis, like when I'm jumping rope, he always comes up and wants the rope. And then I'm like, okay, I guess I'm not jumping rope right now. And then he, you know, it's so cute. It's good to be that example for your kid, you know, to move and show them, you know, that fitness is important. You know, it doesn't have to be crazy fitness like I used to do. It's just like move your body every day.
Yeah. Move your body. And that is a lesson we can all take. And I just want to say, I said it, but you're nailing it. You have the fitness app, you have the talk, yes. Hooray for gratitude is what she's
I love that
today.
One.
And I'm like, too.
Yeah. I need, one. I just have hooray for women. I need to get more of them, but, yeah, I like that one.
You should see my closet, you guys. It's because we obviously get each design. And so Anna walked into the closet the other day to barely brought anything from Paris. And she was like, man, you really got to get some more tops. All you have are white hooray for shirts.
But they're cute and they're simple and
classic.
They put out positivity.
Well, what is fun is like, what am I in the mood for today? Like when I saw gratitude, I was like, that's right. Hooray for gratitude. Or sometimes you're like, oh, hooray for sisters. I'm in a sisterly mood today. So it is kind of fun.
I love that so much. Oh my, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for being here with us, lady. Yes. I mean, it is just like,
guys, thank you.
I know that it's a busy, busy time for you. And it was just so nice to connect. I mean, your inbox is probably flooded all the time. I don't know how you do it on top of all the other things with the DMs and you acknowledge the love and support that people are giving you. And that is incredible. That is, you know, this mark of an awesome, solid human being. And you're definitely making the world a brighter place. And So we just want to say thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. It was so nice to be here. I loved talking to you, mamas.
Thanks. Yeah. There's nothing like some mamas.
I agree.
That mom boss life for sure. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Take care.
All right. Take Have care, a good guys.
One. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.